This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
There's not enough diversity in the Malaysian startup scene. Razif Aziz, the acting group CEO of Cradle, said that recently, that the Malaysian startup scene lacks diversity and that there's a glut of digital-based tech ideas being pitched, but not enough hard tech solutions. And when someone from Cradle, which is an investment program that has been around for 16 years, by the way, says something like that, it's best for budding entrepreneurs in the market to pay attention. Because not only does that open up a space for new ideas and opportunities, it also encourages us to explore why our tech startups aren't able to pursue bigger ideas even if they have them. Is it the money? Is it the awareness? Is it the work itself? We're going to get all those questions answered in this two-part interview with Cradle's Razif Aziz, who'll be joining us today and tomorrow on Open for Business. Now, Razif, before we get into the slightly more technical questions, how would you describe the Malaysian startup scene or the startup space at the moment? Like, because, you know, Cradle has been in the game for a while now, as I mentioned. So what is your outlook on the startup space?
Okay, Cradle has been around 16 years. I think past 10 years, especially the last 5 years, perhaps, you could say that the startup scene is at its most vibrant. It's also a robust ecosystem in the sense that most, if not all, of the elements that you can see in other ecosystems around the world are already present, from angel investors, accelerators, to various form of funders or people or entities that are interested in this space. So they're all there. The last bit, over the last 5 years, perhaps you could say, we've begun to see more corporates in this space. So that is sort of like, I wouldn't say the last piece of the jigsaw. These things are always evolving as well. There'll be new stuff, you know, things like that. But yeah, corporates have come in. So that's a pretty big deal as well. So this is where we're at. I think if you were to start up or thinking of starting up, this is about the best time to start, I suppose, barring the economic situation today, of course. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard not to compare our startup space to the neighbors like you know, mostly Singapore. And their tech startup scene is robust. You know, it gets all the foreign players interested and pouring in their money and the investments. Do we have the potential to get to that point in, say, like maybe, I don't know, like 5 years' time?
To become like Singapore, I don't think... there are people who probably disagree with me, but I don't think that's possible simply because Singapore is a financial hub already, even before all this, right? Mm-hmm. It's where everybody parks their money. It has the most number of millionaires, those kind of stuff. And what's with happening in Hong Kong, it probably will gain because of what's happening in Hong Kong. I think they're already saying... people moving funds to Singapore, safe havens, etc. So that's where people would go. It's like a go-to place when if you want to raise funds. Mm-hmm. So becoming like Singapore, maybe not in that from that perspective, but becoming more robust, producing more companies or startups that are able to expand beyond Malaysia, that's probably more doable. And I think we are already on the right track. I think I've written just recently, you know, I think that I said, you know, local startups need to look at how to enhance resilience. And when I mean that, in the most general way possible. I suppose it means boost those revenues if you can, get that market share, whatever it takes to wade or you know, sort of like get through this very challenging next few years. My concern is for those startups that are just relying on Malaysia alone, consumption, local consumption. So if anything happens, global markets hit us and there's less spending, etc., and all that, that, you know, our startups will of course be affected.
So what is realistic, like, for us, like if we were to benchmark ourselves, if we were to aim for something, what is the realistic goal for us?
In the bigger perspective of things, I mean, we have competition like Singapore, which is, you know, financial hub, that's where you raise funds. We also have places like Indonesia and Vietnam. Those are very large markets. People who are number one in those markets have a chance of being sort of like number one in the region, just like that, you know. For example, Gojek, Tokopedia, Bukalapak, those kind of companies' primary markets are just their, you know, home markets. And because of the size of those markets, they become very, very big just serving that particular market. So it will our niche will probably be, it's a great place to deploy certain types of services, goods and services, because of its sophistication. I mean, its relative sophistication compared to its neighbors. Sort of like develop it, and then from there deploy it for use elsewhere. So
global markets and stuff.
Yeah, regional. I always say regional first for our guys.
Yeah.
Global markets have always been on their minds. Of course, everybody starts a startup, you know, like I want to, like, world domination, right? Regional domination or Southeast Asia is probably more realistic, and it's good enough. I wouldn't say good enough. That sounds like being, you know, not ambitious enough, but it's great. It's a huge market. Southeast Asia, right? Rather than meet competitors head on and not knowing what the outcome would be, right? I think we need to leverage and exploit what those competitive advantages are and become very good at what we do in those specific niche areas. That's how we would compete, or at least that's from my perspective. I wouldn't say that, you know, that I'm the expert in this area, but that would be my perspective.
You know, when we think about solutions to, like, big issues, like these issues, the government is always the obvious go-to because, you know, like, low-hanging fruit. Do you think they're playing a big enough role to grow this space? You know, can more be done, or, you know, is the onus on the entrepreneurs?
In terms of have they done enough or can more be done, I would say they've done a lot. It's just that people don't want to know or are not informed enough. A lot of money have gone into development type programs. You know, either into R&D or into specific sectors to boost or to catalyze those sectors. If there were weaknesses, it would be the fact that perhaps industry is asking too much from, you know, you can't depend, you can't just keep pointing to the government.
Yeah.
I think industry's role is to, from these programs or this push into specific areas or whatever you can call that, look at what opportunities are there, and then, because they need to be able to take those opportunities and bring it forward. Because the government can only sort of like start it or catalyze it, right? And I think the government's role will continue to be to catalyze development into particular areas where they see benefits to the country, either from an economic point of view or social impact. So I would think that the government, this current government especially, will continue to lead innovation in that sense. So they will continue to put money towards R&D, supporting R&D, innovation spaces. We'd count as one of those recipients. I mean, those allocations that are coming to us, we are supporting startups, tech startups. So to be clear, tech startups. So in that sense, we're still supporting that innovation agenda. And I think it is the role of government to lead this, right? Yeah. So we can't leave it to private sector, because private sector with it probably will focus on development that I suppose you could call it a selfish sort of perspective, in a sense that it is for
self-serving.
For profits, you know, return value to its shareholders and founders, etc. So the government needs to be able to identify new areas, right? So the idea is, when we identify these big goals, right, it will be in areas that, when they identify it, it will be in areas where there will be a lot of different sort of like impacts, right? And our role as agencies and ministries, the infrastructure around it, will be to facilitate that. Yeah. So again, like I said, I guess great having, you know, big goals. The execution, the devil is in the details. The execution will be, you know, so we'll need to coordinate and move in the right direction.
Right. I'm speaking with Razif Aziz, Acting Group CEO of Cradle here on Open for Business. We'll take a quick break and then we'll talk more about the Malaysian tech startup scene when we come back. BFM 89.9.
Beats, funk, mixtapes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business on BFM 89.9. I'm Arvind Yuvaraj and I'm joined by Razif Aziz, Acting Group CEO of Cradle. And we're talking about the state of the Malaysian startup scene and what it can build itself to be in the coming decade. Cradle has announced new grants for 2020, like a wider sort of scope, wider range of grants to choose from. Why the expansion? Why now?
First of all, I'd like to say, when I say announce new grants, I will say that we want to roll out these new products. And we're going through the process of approvals right now. So I don't want to get myself into trouble by saying, hey, where are those new grants, right, in 2020? And people are like, I want to apply for these new grants. What are those new grants? The idea behind that is we wanted, you know, because we are now under new leadership, under MassTech, under YB Yobin. We want to be able to address or to service a new audience. Because over the last 16 years, I think a large portion of our applications and a large portion of those companies that we approve are, the majority of them are from digital tech or digital related. We see a very few from the hard sciences or deep tech or whatever you want to call this stuff. You know, the biotech stuff, the green tech stuff, nanotechnology, you name it. Those, very few. It's simply a function of the amount that we provide, which is 300,000. So for the most part, a lot of these startups that are in that, in those hard science kind of sectors, are unable to use such small amounts. So they tended to go to other agencies or look for other support. So we don't see as many. Not to say that we don't see any at all. We do see some, but it's too few. So the concern is we need some more diversity in this space, right? In our case, when we say startup, it's basically the digital tech guys, you know, the e-commerce platform, apps, software, digital content, maybe AI, fintech, prop tech, reg tech. All that is sort of like digital or digital related. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. In a way, perhaps that's where our strengths are. In a way, it's where a lot of people can get up and going faster. Deployment, execution can be faster, uses less money. That's the beauty of technology, right? It's also the right thing to do in terms of diversifying this space. I think I got into trouble recently for certain things that I said. I will say I didn't mean it that way, but in a way, I think people need to realize that it's going to be a missed opportunity for Malaysia if we keep going down this path. I mean, there's a lot more to this space than just digital tech stuff.
Yeah.
There are other stuff that's going on. And I think we need to be able to address that audience as well and see what are the interesting things that are coming out.
But what are those issues? Like what does Malaysia badly need from the tech space right now, at this very moment, that people can step up to solve?
Traffic congestion, transport, affordable transport, right? Or anything that facilitates affordable transport. I mean, the government is putting a lot of money into transport. But can there be someone who sort of like feeds into that, you know, that makes people want to use all that transport and enhance the whole experience, as opposed to it's all there, but I still want to drive my car or something like that, you know, things like that. or issues like our healthcare system. It's becoming more and more expensive, and people are now jamming up the public hospitals. It takes a whole day just to see a doctor. It's not the fault of the infrastructure. I mean, the infrastructure just can't keep up. Everybody's going there. Other things like dengue. Dengue is still around, man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How many
It still
years?
Exists. It still exists. Yeah.
I mean, and people die of it every year, and we're nowhere closer to getting a cure or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Things, either cure or prevention,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can do it any which way. I mean, the cure could be more expensive to do. Maybe prevention.
Yeah.
Right? Different techniques, different technologies to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy for me to say, I guess, sitting on the other side of the table. So it will be a challenge for CRADL.
Mm-hmm.
I won't deny that. But we are up for the challenge. We have 16 years of experience behind us. We hope to be able to harness that. We hope to be able to create this ecosystem that the startup scene enjoys, which is largely digital tech. So sort of like try and recreate that ecosystem for the university space, the innovation space, where all the R&D is being done, so that they enjoy the benefits of angel investors who are willing to invest in these kind of things, as opposed to just fintech and digital tech. So we want to be able to do that while at the same time not forgetting our existing audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big audience, and people still expect us to deliver the same thing year after year. So we need to be able to address that existing audience plus this new audience as well, you know, so that I think only then can we say we've looked everywhere for the best of the best innovations.
You mentioned that you recently celebrated CRADL's 16th year in the field, in the game itself, with an awards night. So 16 years, no small thing, no small feat. Has the way CRADL filters its applications and picks who to fund and who doesn't get the funding, has that framework changed, or has it been the same for the last 16 years? Or has it like evolved into something else?
These things don't stand, stand still. I mean, every time, every year, we learn new things like, oh, that's a loophole, or that's an issue, let's fix that, and then we introduce it. So things like due diligence processes are its most robust over the last 16 years, I suppose. We do a whole range of due diligence before we start. Anyone who's been through our process will know that. So coming back to one of the key points of your question, the sort of criteria, has it changed,
mm-hmm.
How we select? I don't think so. In terms of criteria, perhaps things change given the context or the circumstances. Today, because of the large number of applications we receive, so like approval rate is like less than 2%, I think, at this point, for the CIP thread, mm-hmm. the current one, yeah? And I don't think it's going to be any different if we roll out new ones. 600-700 applications a year and less than 2%. There's so few that get through. So you're constantly looking at ways to make sure you find differentiating factors. And one of the things that I suppose catches people out is that, you know, traction. We look at traction now to be able to differentiate between, because traction has a number of advantages. It indicates market validation, as the product or service has been validated in the market. No traction means you haven't done any validation. I say all this knowing that some people will disagree, like, oh no, it should be this or that. Yeah, I take that point.
Mm-hmm.
No issues there. And if I give you a list, it's the same things any investor looks at,
yeah.
right? It's the usual solution problem thing, size of market, addressable, total market, addressable market, your ability to execute. So we look at you, the founder, your team. If you're doing something like really high-end, like really complex, but your guys are all like very little experience, working experience, and are just at the sort of like degrees, you know, undergraduate degrees. And the question would be, can you really do this like super high-end AI thing that you say you can do? What's your exposure? What's your background? You know? So, yes, people are involved. It's not infallible. But we have put in enough processes to mitigate and control that. And we look at the same stuff any investor looks at.
Right. I've been speaking with Razif Aziz, Acting Group CEO of Cradle, about the local tech startup scene and what can be done to cultivate new ideas and create a more robust environment. Razif will be joining us again tomorrow, by the way, to dive even deeper on what the local entrepreneurs can do to grow their businesses in the decade to come. This interview is also available via podcast on the BFM website, which is bfm.my, and you can get it on the BFM app. If you have the BFM app, if you don't, you can get it from the Apple App Store or Google Play for free. And we're also available on Spotify. We are parked under the podcast section. This has been Arvind Yuvraj on Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.